And Detective Eric Edson from the Sheboygan Police Department is in studio with us this morning. Eric, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Kelly, how are you?
I'm okay. You got through the mess okay without too much difficulty?
Yeah. Do you mind if I just take a minute to reinforce the winter parking rules?
Go right ahead.
So the DPW had declared a snow emergency, and that snow emergency is in effect until DPW declares that it's no longer in effect. And just to remind people that means that you cannot be parked right now on any snow emergency route, any boulevard, cul-de-sac, or dead end. You should have been parked on the east side of the street last night. If your vehicle is plowed in, you need to move that vehicle right away, or it's going to probably be ticketed and towed, and then you'll be responsible for those charges. If the plow has gone through on the west side, you can move your vehicle over to that west side. And then tonight, depending upon if the snow emergency is still in effect, there'll be some parking rules to park on the odd side or the even side of the street. So if you've got any question, just go to SheboyganDPW.com, and the rules are right on the website for you. But save yourself the hassle. We'd rather have you move the vehicle and let the plows clean up than have to ticket and tow your car.
Yeah, that's not fun for either party, right?
No, the officers would rather be doing other things than that, than it just leaves a bigger mess. So if you can get out there and get your car moved, we'd really appreciate it.
All right. Good advice. Tax time, Eric. And, of course, if you're a regular listener, you know Eric always keeps us on top of fraud and scams. And tax time is full of it, isn't it?
Yeah, we're right in the middle of it right now. People are doing their taxes now. So I got a couple tips for people just to try to navigate, avoid being taken advantage of during the tax season. There's a lot of people out there that are very reputable tax preparers, but there are some people that aren't. And it's important for people to know that even if you have someone prepare your taxes, you're ultimately responsible for that information on your tax return. So make sure that you check the references of your tax preparer, make sure that they have the right qualifications, and never sign a blank tax return. If they give you a tax return ahead of time to sign it just so that they can fill it out and send it in, obviously don't do that. Make sure that you review everything that's on there before you sign it. That way you're aware of it before it gets submitted to the IRS. Another big scam that happens, particularly in businesses, is a W-2 phishing scam. So employees, if you work in the accounting department or finance department, you might get an email that looks like it's from your boss or from the CEO or someone up in the administration saying that they need copies of somebody's W-2 form for whatever audit purposes. They might need someone's name, social security number for tax purposes. Make sure that you're verifying with the person that you think is sending you that email before you send that personal information. It's not hard for scammers to impersonate corporate executives or people within an organization. So make sure that you're verifying that person is actually requesting that before you send that information out there.
Good advice. And then there's IRS phishing scams too, aren't there?
Yeah, and this is probably the most prevalent that, you know, the everyday person might run into. You might get an email or a text message that purports to be from the IRS. It's going to have that kind of urgency kind of nature to it. That's what they're going to try to get people to panic or to act without thinking. There's usually going to be instructions either to click on a link or to fill out a form. And some of the tactics that they might use is saying that you need to update your information with the IRS. Maybe you're due a special refund this year because of some special circumstance. You're due some large amount of money. Maybe there's some fraudulent activity on your IRS account. Any number of scams to try to get you to click on these links. Like most phishing scams, look for the poor grammar, look for spelling errors. Look for typos, things like that. Make sure you're double-checking web addresses. And again, never, ever click on links in emails or text messages that are unsolicited. You might also get a phone call. The scammers have been spoofing IRS. So on your caller ID, it might say IRS or something, Internal Revenue Service on your caller ID. Just be aware that that's the case. And the IRS will generally never contact you on the phone or by a text message. It'll always be by U.S. mail if there's an issue with something. You know, sometimes when they do call, they'll try to get you to pay by a gift card or a prepaid card.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, those are always going to be scams. And one way that you can kind of protect your information is if you go to irs.gov, you can click on a box on that website that you can set up and create an account on the IRS website, and you can create what's called a Identity Protection Personal Information Number. So that it's a 6-digit PIN number that you create, and it's only known to you and the IRS. So when you file your taxes, you have to include that PIN number to verify your identity. That PIN number is good for one calendar year. And then that PIN number will automatically change the next tax year, and then you just log into your account to display what your PIN number is for that current year, and then that's what you submit when you submit your taxes. And that goes a long way to prevent other people from, if they have your information, from being able to successfully submit a return pretending to be you.
I wasn't aware of that. Is it something relatively new?
It's fairly new. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Interesting.
But it's free. It's a free service that they offer, and it's very easy to set up. You just go on that website, set up an account. You just verify your identity. They're going to ask you for some personal information, like your social security number, some account. They're going to have to verify your identity. That's legitimate. They need to make sure that you are who you say you are. But then you'll be able to create this PIN number, and that'll be good for that tax year. And then, like I said, the next year, they'll create a new one for you, and then you just log into your account to display that year's PIN, and you submit that when you submit your taxes. And that way, the IRS can verify that it's you and not a scammer.
Huh. Might be worth doing.
I think so. We talked about it. It's a shame that you have to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is.
But these
it
little
is.
Things go a long way in protecting yourself. And I can tell you from past experience working with people that have fell victim to this, if someone files your taxes as you, that's a pain in the butt to get to undo and to get your refund and all that kind of stuff. It's much easier to try to prevent it than from cleaning it up in the afterwards.
Good point. You want to talk about a recent PayPal scam. What's going on with this, Eric?
Yeah, so the purpose of me talking about this is certainly not to judge anybody. People make mistakes. People get pressured to do things. It's more important to bring awareness that these are the kind of tactics that scammers use. So this is a real-life example that just came up within the last week or so that one of our patrol officers handled. There's a significant loss of money, and there are several red flags that regular listeners might be able to identify, but we just want to bring awareness to people that these scams are out there and there's significant potential loss for money. So the victim in this case, it's not clear to me exactly how they got to this fraudulent PayPal website, whether they were redirected by a malicious link or whether their credentials were compromised, but they got to a PayPal, what they thought was their PayPal account, and they saw some fraudulent transactions on it. So they called the number that was on the website, which turned out to be a fraudulent number because the website wasn't legitimate, and they directed them to call a security officer from PayPal who convinced them to download an app on their computer that allowed this scammer remote access to their computer.
Oh,
So
it went from bad to worse.
Bad to worse, yeah. So that's kind of red flag number one is these companies will generally should not have access to your computer. If you're ever asked, like sometimes with tech support, they want to access your computer, just make sure, verify the web address, make sure that who you think you're communicating with is who you're communicating with and not a scammer.
Sure.
That can be difficult, especially for people that don't have a lot of technical knowledge, but it's an important step before you would allow anyone to have remote access to your computer. So the criminal was able to convince them that there were some fraudulent loan activity on their PayPal account, and that in order to deal with this, they had to cover the loan amount, and then they would eventually get paid back. So that's red flag number two. Hmm. If you're the victim of fraud, you should never have to pay any money up front to correct an issue that wasn't your making. So in the end, this criminal convinced the victim to transfer two wire transfers, one for $33,000 and one for over $17,000.
Oh.
And as we've talked in the past, once they get you to pay money, they keep at you. They're not satisfied with just that. So the scammer then created a circumstance where there was a need for additional money and convinced the victim in this case to go buy two rounds of $5,000 worth of gift cards to pay.
Geez.
Red flag number three, legitimate companies will never ask for payment via gift card. In this case, the credit card company actually denied the initial transactions because they flagged it as fraud.
Mm-hmm.
The victim, believing that this was, that they had to do this, that they were in some kind of trouble and needed to do this, called their credit card company and actually said, no, this is legitimate and please allow the transaction to go through. So that's another red flag. If your credit card company is contacting you, whether it's the credit card company, the cashier at the store, the bank, and if someone tells you, hey, in my personal or professional experience, this looks like a scam, take a moment just to take a breath, talk to family members, talk to somebody else, consider that it probably is a scam before you go ahead and send that money. So they end up sending the gift cards, and then not being satisfied with that, the scammer asked if they had investment accounts, which they did, and wanted them to transfer over $20,000 more from their investment accounts, actually convinced the victim to open up an online checking account for the purposes of doing this transfer. Luckily, at that point, they had recognized enough of the red flags that they thought maybe this was not legitimate and contacted law enforcement. So they didn't wire that extra $20,000. But like I said, not meant to be judgmental at all. It's just important that we talk about these kind of things when they happen and be able to recognize these red flags as they occur. And for people that are regular listeners or the people that are familiar with these types of scams, make sure you're talking with your friends, neighbors, parents, especially people that might be older that don't have a lot of experience with this or may be more easily tricked or coerced into believing that there's some kind of urgent matter to prevent this from happening. The statistics would lead us to believe that the elderly, older people are generally targeted a little bit more than younger people and sometimes fall victim to this a little more often. So have those conversations. Make sure that you're having those conversations with older parents, neighbors, things like that, coworkers, just to make sure that they're aware of some of these red flags that we see in this case and that they don't lose that kind of money, because that money's gone, unfortunately.
I was going to say, once you wire that money, it's difficult, if not impossible, to ever get back, right?
Right, right. Law enforcement can certainly make some attempts to try to track it, but my experience is, you know, we chase IP addresses, or you can look for the wire transfer receipts. We might have really good video of a person picking up that wire transfer someplace, if it was like a MoneyGram or something, down in a different state. But how do we identify that person?
Sure.
And a lot of times, even if we do identify that person, they're just the middle person. They're being scammed themselves. They're being told a story themselves. And eventually, very quickly, that money makes its way overseas. And then, a local police department like the Sheboygan PD doesn't have jurisdiction to do that. And the FBI and the FTC, they get so many of these complaints, they're limited with their resources. So
sure.
A lot of times it's unfortunate that once people do send money via gift cards or wire transfers, that money's gone and we're not able to get it back for you.
All right. Let's be careful out there, right?
That's right.
Jeez.
That's right.
Good stuff as usual, Eric. Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next month.
All right.